From the creators who brought you RuPaul's Drag Race and Million Dollar Listing, this is World of Wonder's Wow Report. Things that make us go wow.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of the Wow Report, where we count down top 10 things of the week that make us go wow. I am Fenton Bailey, co-founder of World of Wonder, joined by my inestimable colleagues, James St. James, literary sensation.
Incomparable. I'm inestimable. I'm incomparable.
And inimitable.
Inimitable.
Yeah, that's what we're doing. The inimitable Blake Jacobs.
Hi.
Tom is overseas on special mystery assignment, but we'll be back next week.
He's coming back from tomorrow.
Okay. Oh, right, right. It's one of those things where you leave and arrive before you've left.
Mm-hmm. I have a feeling, though, that we get to keep him for like a month or so, don't we? We have him for a while.
He's made it plain that he intends to go nowhere for a long time. So safe travels, Tom. Let's start counting. Oh, I'm going to start this week at number 10.
Number 10.
I saw Madonna.
Oh,
she has done 5 nights at the Forum of the Celebration Tour, the postponed Celebration Tour. We originally had tickets to go to the opening night in Vancouver. No, James, you got to hear me on this. Okay. And she canceled because of the near-death experience and everything. And so these were the tickets that came up to replace that. And I was going to say, I didn't really want to go because I had to get up really early the next day to get on a plane. Post-COVID, I'm more of a homebody than I ever was. And the idea of being out of the house after 6 or 7 o'clock.
I'm right with you on that, yes.
Existential dread. Add to which, of course, that Madonna is known for not always being on time. So I said, oh my God, I'm going to be up to like 2 in the morning. I have to get up like 2 hours later to go to the air. It's, you know, anyway, didn't want to go. It's Monday night and it's cold. But we went out for dinner first with Nolan and Billy and we timed it brilliant. We just walked in literally as she was taking the stage for the first number.
Gorgeous.
Which is just perfect. Perfect.
That's how you do it.
Nothing really matters. What a great way to begin the show. I mean, there was Bob the Drag Queen doing all that stuff, which was amazing. But Nothing Really Matters. What a great song. It's sort of melancholy, but not doomy. And just a sort of Nothing Really Matters. It's a very good feeling song. And then, of course, a few more songs, you know, Get Into the Groove and Everybody and Holiday. I've never really loved Holiday, but it has become the happy birthday of our times. But then it goes into this other place. And you see a dancer, only one dancer on the stage, the track slows down, collapses to the stage, and it goes into Live to Tell. And that is when, I'm sure you've seen it, the memorial. The screens come down and you see these black and white pictures of people famous, like Keith Haring, and then also some not so famous, like Martin Burgoyne, who designed her record covers. And I don't know what it is. Like, there was something about, I'd seen it on social media and thought it was great. And everyone said how moving it was, but something about being there was so powerful. And I wonder if it's like, it was in the context of a celebration. You know, we're there celebrating this amazing artist's amazing body of work. Love her, hate her, whatever you have to say about her, she has had a string of definitional hits, like no other.
And besides that, you know, she was there for the gay community throughout the AIDS crisis.
Exactly.
And she was the one person who has always been an ally. And that tugs at your heart when you start thinking about it.
Well, this is it. I mean, it wasn't just we were there celebrating her body of work, seeing all these other faces.
And it must mean something extra to you too when you see John Sachs and you see Howie Mandelbrot and you see.
I will tell you. Yeah. It was like something I've never experienced before in my life, and I was standing there, John Sachs, Martin Burgoyne, Howie Montauk, and I was like, I think what I, as a person, I'm very good at walling off my feelings about like not feeling anything. That's kind of like what I like to do. And, but this, I think had it been a memorial type environment, I would have been prepared and sort of shut down. But this was a celebration. And I was standing there and James, I was standing there next to Nolan, my 17-year-old son. I was standing there next to Billy, my husband. I thought about Rue. I thought about Randy. I thought about you. I thought about Andy. I thought about all of us. And I thought, fuck, we are here.
We live to tell.
Lucky. And it just hit me. I mean, it was like, and I just started crying. It's like, and even talking about it now, I just can't stop crying about it. And, but it wasn't sadness. It was just this pure sort of emotion. And I've been thinking about it ever since, because I swear to you, I think it's a life-changing moment. It's something I'll always remember. It's not something I ever expected from her, because she, to me, is the queen of spectacle. She's in control, powerful, fuck you, you know, all that stuff. I didn't imagine I would just be socked right between the eyes by this. And I just felt such a wave of, you know, for all the people who aren't around who were doing such great work at the same time as my daughter was breaking out, I started crying and I couldn't stop. I just couldn't stop. And I just thought, like, how lucky we are. And I know, you know, Rue's got his book out and there's been some stuff said by some people. And I'm just thinking, well, fuck that. You know, the contribution made is so great. And how fortunate we are that he is here. How fortunate we are that you are. How fortunate we just are to be here. And, you know what? I think it felt like a release. Like, I don't think I've ever really confronted that moment in our lives. I think I've always lived in a, you know,
well, I think so much of what I had to do, what you had to do, what we all had to do was to get through it. You can't break down every single day. You had to build walls around yourself to get through it. And then, you know, PTSD works in, you know, waves, and it could be 20 years later that all of a sudden the wall comes crashing down and you don't know what's going to cause it, but it does. And
that was it. I promise you, I thought about it on the plane and I started crying on the plane and I was just a mess. And I'm kind of like, and then Andy Cohen said, you know, I want to know what was it like. And so I wrote him a text yesterday and I was just blubbing as I was trying to write. And I kind of look, you know, just now I'm just, you know what it was? I think like it felt like a release. It felt like she was saying, you know, we all went through this and here we are and it's okay. And I felt slightly bad about all the mean things I've said about Madonna, but not that bad, because I just ultimately love her. And I think she's a force of such power. And the fact that I could stand next to my 17-year-old son and be gay and be married, you know, it's thanks to people like Madonna.
Possible. This was not possible in the 90s, the 80s.
Yes. You know, if you get a chance to see Madonna and see this, I hope I haven't oversold it, but really go see it. She's playing all through the South, which God knows they're, need to hear it and till the end of till the end of April she's in Mexico, but right. Power to her. What a great show. And you know, bless her for having pretty much every drag queen from Drag Race on the show too, you know.
I've got Aquaria, Miss Fame, Kevin Aviance I put on my list just because we talked to him on the radio and he's on Hey Queen.
Yeah, Nikki Doll,
Detox, Bob,
Fox, Miss Cracker, Hot Seat, Tiara, Bought Trinity the Truck, Tuck, Simone.
And
Fitten? When I went, it was Terry Joe.
All right. And he was that the
Terry Joe was a TikTok star that Madonna's played on TikTok with.
You're like, it's not gonna, you're not gonna get anywhere with this conversation.
Well, there are younger people who listen to this.
There are younger people.
There are no young people listening to us right now. Would you stop with your lies?
I tell you what, let's go on to number nine while I go get a tissue.
Number nine.
Dune part two. My God, yeah. I went to go see Dune part two the other day. Actually, on Friday, I watched Dune part one. I had never seen it before because when I went to see it in the theater, I was so annoyed with it because Dune part one, the first hour of Dune part one is just world building. It's exposition, you know, and at some point the dialogue is like the scribble bibble. Need to scrub the dod to get to Nermal 3. And you're like, what in the hell is all of this? Like, it's just, it's nonsense. It's gobbledygook is what it is. But I watched it on Friday, and then I went Saturday morning. So basically, I had 8 hours of Dune last weekend. Wow. And Dune Part 2 is absolutely breathtaking. It's so spectacular. Everything you hear about it is true. It is a masterpiece. There is the cinematography is just, I mean, it's just chef's kiss. It's just unbelievable. Have you seen it yet, Fenton?
No, I've that closest I got is the popcorn bucket, which is my go-to companion.
There's a scene in the very, very beginning where the Harkonnen, the bad guys, are floating up a mountainside, and it's one of the most beautifully shot things. There was just gasps in the audience when you see how I saw it on IMAX, and it is so spectacular. And everything from the soundtrack to the costumes to the, just the visuals of this movie are just unbelievable. Austin Butler steals the movie like you've never seen anyone steal a movie before. He has 17 minutes on screen and he blows everybody out of the water. He is psychotic. He is homoerotic. He is the way he moves at certain points. There's like a drool coming out of his mouth and he just starts screaming. And then there's another point where Timothy shouts something and he turns and he snaps to attention and his eyes get wide. He is so turned on by Timothy and he just the homoeroticism of the fight scenes, like it's just like sex. And that's canon. That they say that in the book, that it was like sex when they were fighting. And you just see that. You see the way they do it. The soundtrack.
Is Austin a scribble bibble or a scrodlodon?
He's a scribble bibble. The soundtrack is unlike anything you've ever heard before. It's like alien music, and it's and IMAX is 3 hours of this woman screaming. My sister was falling asleep and snoring, and I was like, how can you snore when this woman is like screaming in like our ears at like 150 decibels? But the interesting thing to me, and this is, I'm not telling anything, but in the 1960s when it was written, it was a metaphor for fundamentalism seeping throughout the Middle East. And it was about the rise of fascism in Afghanistan and Iraq and Iran and all of that. And you see that, you still see that in some of this here. But interestingly, what resonates now is that they have to go to the Southern fundamentalist religious zealots to build him up into the Messiah that he's supposed to be. And then in the end, and this is not a spoiler, but whatever, that he becomes Space Hitler.
Love Space Hitler. I mean, just, you know,
you think that he's a good guy in the first two movies. You think he's supposed to be save the universe, but then in the end he gets turned to the dark side by the religious Southern fundamentalist, which is just totally a Trumpian metaphor for, you know, religious zealots in the South, the evangelicals building up this Messiah to become a Hitler. It's very interesting. It's fascinating, and the ramifications of it are just.
Did you feel watching the first episode that was a good thing to have done, that it sort of vibed you up for it, you know, got you? Did you have a renewed appreciation for that first
episode? I do. I could go back and watch all 8 hours again. I really do. There's so many things that resonate. My mind was just vibrating with so many images and sounds and costumes and hot boys with great, you know,
And is there one more to come?
Yeah, well, they're trying. They haven't announced it yet, but there's Messiah, which is the next one, Dune Part 3 Messiah, in which he goes out and becomes Space Hitler. And then there's another two books after that in which he's dead and it's his like great-grandchildren or something are now running the universe. So I don't know if Timmy will be in those.
Oh, wow.
But yeah. But Fenton, by all means, I mean, and go see it in a big theater with an audience because it's spectacular. Blake, you don't need to see this.
Why doesn't Blake need to see it?
Because I know what Blake is gonna do. Blake is, I don't like it. I don't get it. I know Blake.
I hate the Skrittle Diddles.
I still love my popcorn bucket. That's selling for something like $600 on eBay now.
Well, it's funny because they were not out of them when we went to the theater. Everyone got one. I didn't.
Maybe it's like people overseas, like in the UK, that need them or something.
Yeah.
Does they have AMC in the UK?
I don't know. Well, that's Dune Part 2 in theaters now. It's called Dune, right? Yeah, Dune Part 2. Blake, number 8.
Number 8.
I made art last Saturday. Can you believe it? Oh. I sculpted art out of clay. Well, art. I'm using it in parentheses. Have you guys ever heard of Craft Contemporary, the museum on Wilshire? It's right across the street from the La Brea Tar Pits.
Oh, it used to be it was a craft museum, but it was a dollhouse museum for many years. I think it's right next to the gym right there.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. I didn't know what you're talking about. But yeah. It's really close to LACMA, like that extension bridge they're building over Wilshire. And for people listening, if you watch La Brea on NBC, this is, you know, across the street from the La Brea Tar Pits where all that, you know. Well, this is a museum, and they also have a shop. It's open Tuesday through Sunday from 11 to 5 p.m. You pay under $10 any day, you know, but they have tiers if you're a member and how old you are. And Sundays, it's pay what you wish. And my roomie, Steven, he does, like, string art, you know. So we've been to see exhibits there and stuff. But they occasionally have classes. So this week, we took Imaginary City's slab building with Umbi. And Umbi is the artist woman who does these. She's a Korean lady, and she was amazing.
Can there be a drag queen named Umbi? I love that.
Yeah, it's spelled E-U-N-B-I.
Umbi, okay.
Yeah. Umbi. This is the description of the class. Just so you know, we had no idea what we were walking into. Create imaginary worlds and slab-built architectural structures in clay. Artist Umbi Cho will guide participants through basic slab-building techniques in clay, including how to plan and design hollow forms, execute a clean slab build, and finishing details such as cutouts and surface design. So
from what I've seen from your pictures, all the slab buildings sort of look like Flintstones houses.
Yeah. Well, so basically she had created this little slab building, which is really just a knickknack holder, candle, you know, tea light holder thing. You could cut a hole in the top so the fire could get out, you know. She had made the basic design for us because it's just a 3-hour class and we traced it off of paper pretty much. And then you like score the edges. So, you know, you create some like messiness in the edges and then you paste it together with like this clay, milky, muddy, like, it was really fun.
And it's like little liquid mud and you put the two edges together and press and it kind of like joins it
exactly
up.
Yeah, and you have to like she was super clean freak and everything, so she would walk by mine and be like, you can use the tools to clean it up, you know, and I'm just like, oh, that's the inside, no one will see that anyway. But you know, it was a 3-hour class, so we used a heat gun to kind of like heat it up so we could like paint it or to harden the edges. But we'll go back and pick them up in like 3 weeks.
Because they have to go into like a kiln or whatever. And,
right.
And hard. But then you have your house is very small. Where are you putting in this new world, this city that you've built?
Well, it's just two very tiny structures. So I'm sure we'll find place on a console table somewhere.
Are you hooked? Do you want to go again?
I am, actually. I would completely do this again. And I'm looking at upcoming classes. And like at the end of the month, they have glass blowing. And it's not,
it's not free.
Cool. So you have to pay for, you know, the materials and everything. But the glass blowing is going to be $200-something. And you go to the glass blowing shop and
you get to take this home.
So, yeah.
I think you'll like glass blowing because, you know, when you get the, when you get it, when it's, the glass is really hot and you pull it out and you, you know, you're shaping it.
Right.
When you put it back, you put it back in the glory hole.
Oh. Well, that was my next trivia question.
No, I'm just kidding.
Well, no, I can see you taking like pottery classes and doing becoming very crafty, hippie crafty.
Yes. I'm about to sign up for a sewing class. They do sewing classes at LACC for like a month.
I have some outfits that I need made for DragCon. Can you whip me up something?
Well, I don't know about that.
I have some... pillows that I want needle pointing.
Well, that's what we want. We want to make like pillows, and then you can do what is that thing? Latch hooking.
Oh, well, because didn't you go through a little macrame phase about a year ago?
I did. And now I have all this stuff to do like wall, dip dye wall hanging, but it's in Arkansas at my sister's. We just haven't had time to do it when I've been there yet. That's where, you know, it's like macrame ish. You do the cord. And I'm just going to do it all one length and no knots or anything. But then you like dip it into dye and I'm going to pull it up incrementally, you know, so it'll create like,
I see a whole Etsy future in your.
Exactly.
Hey, next everyone week. Has to have a side hustle now.
James, you and I are going to be here next week and be, where's Blake? And he's going to be, you know, at home on his loom doing his macrame and weaving and basket.
A loon on a loom is what he is.
In a loom. Hey, let's take a break. Just a reminder, brand new episodes of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 16 and UK versus the World tonight on WOW Presents Plus. Along with new episodes of Drag Race Belgium and Drag Race España All Stars. So there's a lot to watch over at wowpresentsplus.com. Blake, do you have a question?
I do. Jess Smith, better known as the Sun Baby from the opening credits of the Teletubbies, you know that? Sure, she just had a baby herself and gave a cheeky nod to the show when naming her new daughter. Can you guess her new daughter Poppy's middle name?
All right. We'll be right back here on the WOW Report after the break.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome back to the WOW Report. I'm Fenton here with James and Blake filling in for Tom. Counting down the top 10 things of the week that made us go wow. But first, Blake, you had a question.
I did. I asked. Jess Smith, better known as the Sun Baby from the opening credits of the Teletubbies, just had a baby herself and gave her baby, Poppy, a cheeky middle name with a nod to the show. Can you guys guess the baby's middle name?
Well, it has to be Sunny, doesn't it? Or like Sally or something? Sun? Sol?
I'm going to say uh-oh.
Oh, well.
It's Poppy Ray, R-A-E.
Oh,
that's actually it's a good name.
Yeah, right.
Poppy Ray, I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven. Here's a bit of an amuse-bouche. Margaret Thatcher. Many of you younger listeners may not remember Margaret Thatcher, but she was the very divisive leader of the Conservative Party and British, I think one of the longest-serving British prime ministers from like the end of the 70s.
I don't know. 90s, yeah.
Pretty much, right?
The Iron Lady.
The Iron Lady changed the face of Britain, much hated. You know, I'm not on TikTok, but friends occasionally send me TikTok videos. Not always Tharon. I have a friend in Perth, Australia, who sent me this TikTok video and said, is this for real? And it is a video, I think it's called, Big Nibbles made it. And it's a video of of Margaret Thatcher's favorite food. And I watched this video. It basically involves beef consomme mixed with Philadelphia cream cheese.
Okay, wait, hold on. For our regular American listeners out there, it's consomme is how we pronounce it. Like,
okay. Yeah. Consomme.
I still don't know what that is.
It's clear soup, basically. Beef broth, you know, but also it comes from a can and normally comes out in a gelatinous state.
Yeah.
So it's genuinely repulsive. So that's repulsive item number one. Repulsive item number two, actually, this is not Philadelphia cream cheese, is not repulsive, but when you mix it with consomme, gelatinous consomme, it's sort of until it all melts together.
So it's like a beefy cream cheese.
Ugh. Beefy sort of cream, but I'm not done. Then you add curry powder.
Oh.
Then you refrigerate it and you top it with raw mushrooms, tinned black olives, or leftover chicken.
So it's like an aspic is what you're saying.
I want to say leftover chicken is one of my least favorite things.
Well, yeah, and how leftover is, you know, unsafe. You never know with chicken. It can get you. And so this repulsive dish, I thought, and the commentary is they're making this dish sort of, you know, it's like something out of a witch's cookbook, only palatable to people like her who hated the poor, you know. So you think they're probably just making up this disgusting recipe. Well, I thought, I didn't know. So I did a little Googling and it turns out, yes, she really did make this dish. It was a starter. She used to serve at dinner parties at Number 10 when she was prime minister, because she always believed in still being a cook and a housewife while she was prime minister. And she called it her mystery starter.
It's because if you told anyone what was in it, they wouldn't eat it.
Exactly. I was literally, I thought it was the most unpleasant thing you can imagine.
Well, but a point here is that it is sort of, it was a Southern society thing for decades and decades in the 40s and 50s, the aspic, in which you had like a clear gelatin and you put in like a beef broth and you put in olives and every sort of like vegetable you can think of with like bits of raw meat, like hot dogs and things like that. And it was considered very classy. In my mother's day.
It's funny that actually, when you think about foods of the eras, you know, like people were crazy for aspic. And you look at old cookbooks.
But that's a British thing, isn't it? Like quail and aspic was a big, you know, deal, wasn't it?
Yes. I know, but it just all this repulsive food that came out of cans. I mean, I just like, which goes to show, you know, in the post-war years, we've all been so spoiled that we have fresh food, you know, but back in the day, in Britain,
well, you know, my mother grew up in that post-war era and when cans were it, and nothing made her happier than to open a can of beets and just have a can of beets for dinner, like straight out of the can. She loved canned vegetables, canned corn, canned green beets. And we were like, Mom, you can get the real stuff right there in the next aisle. And she'd be like, no, I just like my cans.
My mom would serve like canned steak chopped up into chunks that came out of a can. I mean, it was like dog food, basically.
Yes.
But, I mean, anyway, if you're interested in Margaret Thatcher's
culinary,
thank you. You could go to worldofwonder.net/wowreport and see some of her favorite recipes. But I came up with a good line for this. Look back in hanger. All right, number six.
Number six.
Feud Capote versus the Swans is still going on. So episode number 7. It's 5 episodes too long, frankly. It all could have been done in 2 episodes. We are having whole episodes that are fantasies, that are dreams. It's fantasy conversations. It is writing that did not exist. It is diaries that did not exist. Whole documentaries that did not really exist. They are just pulling things out of their ass. And I'm not sure whether it's because it's not profitable for a network to have a 2 show or something, they had to stretch it into 8 episodes. Fenton, you would probably know better than I.
But the vibe very much in the biz these days, I think, is that the shorter runs are better, that less episodes the better. Because if you have like a 6-7 8, 10, people just stop watching. So,
well, I don't know why anyone is still watching this, because the performances go from fabulous. Tom Holland doing Capote is fantastic. Naomi Watts as Babe Paley is fantastic. But the couple of the other people, and I'm not going to say their name, but they're just dreadful. They're just, it's just painful to watch them try and do this. And even, you know, I was watching it for the outfits and the verdura and the Bulgari jewels and everything like that. But even that's gotten a little played out. And the other thing that's one of the most interesting things about Truman to me is, first of all, the Studio 54 years, the Andy Warhol interview years, is literally 5 minutes in an episode before, like, you, they just skim right over it. And I think that's all fascinating when he's completely out of his mind and he's, you know, completely avoiding writing, you know.
Is that when he went to Studio 54 with CZ?
Yeah. And that was literally, it was one scene. You saw him dancing. Yeah. And yeah.
But it was interesting, because I even Googled it to see the real pictures.
Oh yeah. I mean, he really did take CZ, but you know, who was the only one who stood by him during this period. But the other most interesting thing about Truman to me is that in 1980, after he's had this decade-long spiral of alcoholism and drug taking and everything, he pulls himself out of it and writes Music for Chameleons, which is one of the greatest books of essays that's ever been written. And it contains some of his best writing. He has a story called A Beautiful Child, in which he goes day drinking with Marilyn Monroe and they go bar hopping one day. And it is the best portrait of Marilyn Monroe that I've ever read. It captures her in a way that I've never seen anybody capture. He does one called Day Job or something like that, where he follows a maid who works on the Upper East Side and he follows her. I mean, he does all these sort of reportage, like, you know, things where it's just him telling these stories, da, 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 and it's fantastic. And they don't even talk about that because it doesn't fit in with their narrative of his spiral, you know. But he pulled himself out for a few years to come back with this amazing, you know, bit of writing, and it's not there. And I think they do a disservice by not.
When did he die, James?
84. And that's the other thing, because in this episode, spoiler alert, he dies. But it shows Babe dying, and there's this whole fantasy of the two of them reuniting in heaven and da 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 da. And then the next scene is him dying, and Babe, once it comes as an angel, and they reunite on a beach in heaven, blah, blah, blah. But she died in 78, he died in 84. So they sort of make it like he died because she died, and they do this whole sort of like squishing time accordion thing that doesn't work at all. I'm just over the whole thing.
Are you going to finish it? Or
I will, but you know, and it's because
it's kind of like, what else could they do?
That's what I'm saying. At this point, they have to keep making up these swans in the bathtub that never happened. Like, you know, I mean, like, girl, there were no swans in her bathtub. Just, you know, stop it.
All right. So that's, what is it called? Like swans,
feud,
right?
Feud. Capote versus swans.
All right. Number five.
Number five.
Music festivals.
Yeah.
I am going.
You often tell us about music festivals.
I know. Well, I was kind of late to the game. Austin City Limits in 2021 was my first music festival. That's like a big Coachella 3-day festival. But I'm more into the one-day festivals that are like around here. And they just announced two of them, the Cruel World Festival.
Oh, I love the Cruel World Festival. That's the one that hits all the gothy people. The
Gen X, it's like described as like a Gen X, you know, Duran Duran, Interpol, Blondie, Simple Minds, Soft Cell, Adam Ant. I'm going because I want to see the Jesus and Mary Chain and General Public.
Oh, I would love to see Adam and the Ants, though. I've never seen them. That would be fun.
They were supposed to perform at last year's Cruel World, but maybe he couldn't get into the country for some reason. I don't know.
Adam Ants had some mental health issues.
Yeah, he has a lot of issues that probably prevent him from performing, but I would still love, I mean, Ant Music changed my life.
Oh, I love Ant Music, and I'm the Dandy Highwayman who you're too scared to mention. The devil take your stereo and your record collection. The way you look, you'll qualify for next year's old age pension.
They've got another one that's like described as the 2012 You Were on Tumblr sect, which I guess would mean me. But that's the Just Like Heaven Festival, which I think is kind of weird that it's named Just Like Heaven, since like The Cure seems more gothy in that one. But anyway, but at that one, two of my favorite bands, not that big, but that I've never seen, Sleigh Bells and Mike Snow are going to be there. So I am so excited about that.
Wait, Mike Snow, is he the white Rasta guy from Canada?
No, I think that's Informer Snow.
Yeah, Informer.
From the 90s. Yeah. Have you guys been to a music festival? I guess Wigstock would kind of count as a very niche.
How dare you? You think the last time I was at a music festival was in 1992?
You're talking about Informer Snow, which was 1993.
Well, you've never been to Coachella, have you, James?
No, I don't like porta potties, and I don't like sunshine. I don't like fresh air, and I don't like crowds.
Okay, so. Chloe, 7 years.
The festivals are not for you.
No.
There's even a festival for the Eclipse Festival that I'm going home to the Eclipse next month on the 8th, and there's even like a music festival for that. There's just music festivals for everything.
My sister went to Old Cella. Remember when there was Old Cella's there's Coachella?
Oh, I do. Yeah.
And it was like, you know, the Eagles and
That's all I got.
Oh my God. Well, that's great. You can catch Blake at any number of music festivals. If there's a music festival, the chances are Blake is there. So go and say hi. Let's take one more break. I just want to say, Hey Queen, streaming exclusively on WOW Presents Plus. Johnny McGovern sits down with the eliminated queen from each week of RuPaul's Drag Race Season 16 for a tell-all interview. It's not even a humble, it's just a boast. But you know, like the recent episode of Season 16, the highest ratings in 10 years.
Unbelievable. That's so cool.
It seems like it just keeps happening too, which is awesome.
It's so fantastic for World of Wonder. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And I wish Tom was here to receive the praise, because he's such a key part of the show. And Rue and the Queens. I mean, if there weren't such great artists out there, there wouldn't be a show, you know? And they just keep getting better and better. So congratulations to all. Hey, Blake, you got a question?
I do. Which actor's father was the commissioner of Major League Baseball beginning in 1989?
Meaning his
first season as commish was during the Pete Rose scandal. Hint, the actor's nominated for an Oscar this weekend.
Oh, what?
You're listening to the WOW Report on Radio Andy.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome back to the WOW Report. I'm Fenton here with James and Blake standing in for Tom. Weirdest question in a long time.
It's not weird. It's trivia, Fenton.
Okay.
Which actor's father was the commissioner of Major League Baseball beginning in 89, meaning his first season as commish was during the Pete Rose scandal? And this actor's nominated for an Oscar this weekend.
Well, it's funny because I was thinking it was Rooney Mara for some reason, but it's not, because you said it's got to be a young actor. Who's a young actor?
Why does it have to be a young actor?
Because this person, obviously, his father.
You just talked about the movie a couple of weeks ago that he's nominated for. It's Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers. Paul Giamatti's father is Angelo Bartlett Giamatti, and he was the commissioner of Major League Baseball beginning in 1989.
You would think that his father would have been like in 1932 or something like that. Like, how can Paul Giamatti's, was his father 110 when he became?
He's only 56. He was born a year younger before, after
Paul
you.
Paul Giamatti is my age. Oh my God, that makes me feel. Paul Giamatti is like 80 years old if he's a day.
But does that make you happy?
Paul Giamatti.
No, you're not. You're older.
What?
You're older.
I actually am older than Paul Giamatti. You know what's weird? And this, you can cut this out. But like, when you realize that, like, Carol O'Connor was 47 when he started playing Archie Bunker, and Red Fox was 48 when he started playing Sanford and Son. Like,
and all those people on Cheers were in their 30s.
Yes, it's so bizarre. Like, how, it's just, how is this even? How am I older than Archie Bunker?
Well, you're young to me, James, but I do that thing where you go to your year of your birth and then you subtract your age. I would have been born in 1897. I mean, and like to live from 1897 to 1960, what you would have seen, you know, First World War,
telephones, cars, Great Recession,
telephones, yeah, Second World War. I mean,
electricity everywhere. Oh, I mean, just
walking on the moon.
Right? Well, that was 1969.
Oh, well, whatever.
Anyway, okay. Number four.
Number four.
I'm going to read you something. In November, I made a pilgrimage to The Mask, which is now used for storage and video shoots by World of Wonder Productions, the company behind RuPaul's Drag Race, headquartered in the building above. WOW co-founder Randy Barbato, who knew Brendan Mullen, coincidentally, took me down to the legendary basement to have a look around. This is an article from Vanity Fair, the Hollywood issue, about The Mask nightclub, which was a West Coast, obviously West Coast, because we're in LA, a West Coast punk club started by Brendan Mullen in the basement of what is now World of Wonder on Hollywood Boulevard, right by Cherokee.
The first punk club in Los Angeles, in fact.
The only punk club in Los Angeles.
It's the West Coast CBGB.
Yes, perfect. X, The Germs, Joan Jett, Derby Crash, all thanks to Brendan Mullen, this kind of Scottish expat. And when he says in the article written by Joe Pompeo that Randy coincidentally knew Brendan Mullen, Randy and I, as the Pop Tarts, came to LA. We did a few gigs and Brendan took us round a whole night. He took us club hopping and he was a great character. But anyway, the whole point of this is not so much about The Mask. Well, it is The Mask, but it's a story about the Hillside Strangler, because one of the people who went to The Mask was one of the victims of the Hillside Strangler. And it's interesting. This is 1977. And what the author refers to this as the golden age of serial killers in Los Angeles.
The murder of the woman at The Mask. I can't remember her name.
Jane King.
And there's a lot of similarities to the Black Dahlia, in which she was found naked by the side of the road in pieces, I guess. Mm-hmm. But the Hillside Strangler is so interesting because the Hillside Strangler was actually two people. It was
Kenneth Bianchi and his sort of cousin, Angelo Bueno. Now, Angelo Bueno's dead, but Kenneth Bianchi is still alive. He's still in prison, eligible for parole next year. And he'll be 74.
So much of what is in the basement, I often take people down there and show them too, because a lot of the graffiti is still there. And it's like, Belinda Carlisle can suck my dick and Darby Crash is a faggot. And it's all there. It's perfectly preserved. And it's a gorgeous thing to see. I remember when I was a teenager, there was a show on cable TV called New Wave Theater that was live from The Mask. Interestingly, the guy who hosted it was murdered, and he was murdered by a giant prop hammer that was in his house. And it turns out it was one of the punk rock performers at The Mask who he'd pissed off, because he used to purposely try to piss off the performers. I can't remember his name, but years later, he showed up on the soundtrack to David Lynch's Eraserhead. And he's the voice who says, "In heaven, everything is fine," which is so sort of gives me goosebumps thinking that this guy who was murdered is singing this song after his death about being in heaven.
That's so strange.
I'm sorry, I totally hijacked your piece.
No, not at all, not at all. I just thought it was interesting that this West Coast punk scene, I mean, literally, they caught the killers, the Hillside Stranglers, and the club closed, you know, health, safety, and all, because not exactly a safe place for hundreds of people to be. In May 1978, the Go-Go's played that legendary concert where they only had two or three songs, I think, but everything changed after that point. You know, the sort of new wave was out of the bottle. And so it's interesting. It's just kind of nice to know that The Office, there's this sort of history in the basement. And it says that the LA Times critic said, "The mix of people was incredibly diverse. Rich kids, poor kids, drug addicts, alcoholic, art students. On the surface, nobody had much in common. yet they were all unmistakably members of the same tribe. And I kind of think that describes what goes on there in the building to this day.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Right?
So anyway, that's that. And it's in the current issue of the Hollywood issue of Vanity Fair by Joe Pompeo.
And we should also say that Brendan Mullen has a book that you can get on Amazon, Behind the Mask, I think is the name of the book.
Well, and he is also no longer with us because the Red Hot Chili Peppers have a song called Brendan's Death Song about him.
Yeah, you know, he was writing a book about the Red Hot Chili Peppers when he had a fatal heart attack or stroke.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that. He was a nice guy.
He was lovely. Really sweet guy. Number three.
Number three.
A very odd thing happened earlier this week. I don't know if you were paying attention. If you were on social media, you could not escape it. Palace PR in the UK called the paparazzi and had them take a picture of what they said was Kate Middleton, Princess Catherine, leaving, you know, in a car. And they did it in response to the rampant speculation online that something has happened to Kate because we haven't seen her since December. And the conspiracy theories are going crazy, saying that, you know, she's in a coma, she's dead, she has an eating disorder, that she had bad plastic surgery, that she's left William, and that she is somewhere in the country calling the shots. Like, all these things are going on. Everyone is thinking, you know, and we haven't heard from her and we aren't going to hear from her. Well, all of a sudden, she appears in a car in this grainy picture, okay, this fuzzy grainy picture, and it is not Kate. It is
Look like her.
It is not her. It is Melania's body double getting an extra gig. It is a professional body double. Some people thought it was Pippa in a wig. Okay, the chin is different, the nose is different. Kate has moles. This woman did not have any moles on her face. It is clearly the palace doing some weird spin, and you can't figure out why they are doing this. Some people were saying that she had a bad Brazilian butt lift, or that she's trying to grow out some bangs that were bad. Also, Camilla just said that she is stepping back from royal duties to take care of Prince Charles, which means that Charles is much worse than we believe. So a lesser royal died in under mysterious circumstances. And then they bring out some duke or something to take over the royal duties. And he's got a black eye. He's like an 80-year-old man with a black eye. He said he ran into a door.
Which royal died under mysterious circumstances?
Like, some prince or some, the Duke of Kent's son, I believe, maybe it was.
What's your theory? What's going on?
I think there's something wrong. I think there's something wrong with her.
And really?
I wonder if it is like an eating disorder or rehab or something like that where she just cannot come forward. I also believe that she and William are having marital discord. You've seen Prince William staggering around drunk out of his mind while, you know, the other day he was knighting someone or he was giving flowers to someone or something like that. And he couldn't stand up and he was like weaving back and forth. And everyone's
stop
in the middle of the day. He managed to get through 5 minutes of this royal appearance before he had to leave. He staggered off into the bathroom and threw up. It was like, come wait,
James,
out of mind.
James,
I am telling you the truth. All you have to do is go on to X and you will see.
The truth is out there on
the
X.
Truth is out there. So there's something very weird going on, and the palace just made it much worse by sending out this clear imposter to try and smooth things over it. And it just had the opposite effect and had everyone thinking that they killed. The big conspiracy theory is that Camilla is salt burning the family. That's what they're saying. Camilla is salt burning, where she's going through and killing each and every single one of them so that she can be queen and her son can be the next in line.
Well, all will be revealed, or not, maybe, I guess. Let's move on to number two.
Number two.
Have you guys heard about this group of people who went to a restaurant in India and they were mistakenly served dry ice?
Yes. Yes, I did see this.
Well, and you know that dry ice is not good for you. Right.
Which I don't understand, because you see so many of like Hawaiian tiki drinks at tiki bars with like smoking and things like that, but you can't drink it. You can't. What happens?
I guess not. That kind of confuses me too. But I do know that you're supposed to like wear gloves and everything when you handle it and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
Anyway, these people immediately started throwing up and bleeding from the mouth. There were like a group of five adults, and one of them, who was the camera guy, was spared because he was holding one of the kids, I guess. And as they were walking, walking out, I guess they said it was some kind of mint or something. So all the adults took it and ended up spending 2 days in the hospital, and they're in stable condition now.
But how do you even pick up a piece of dry ice and put it in your mouth? I mean, it's smoldering.
Local reports say a waiter came by with what the guests were told was a sugar and ice palate cleanser. But as it turns out, it was actually dry ice, which led to instant burning.
Well, I think that's on them for putting a piece of dry ice in their mouth. I'm not gonna spend too much time worrying about
that. I mean, if something's smoking, I would say...
Well, that's just it. Yes, I don't put anything smoking in my mouth.
Oh, please, James.
He puts it up his nose.
Okay. Any other little weird bits?
That's all I got for this
week. Oh, okay. Did you see the one about the humpback whales? For the first time, they caught humpback whales having sex.
And this is something they've never seen before. They've never photographed whales having sex before.
Never.
And the kicker, Fenton.
That gay. Two gay male whales getting it on, having a whale of a time.
Well, I will tell you my favorite track from Kim Petras' new Slut Pop Miami is called Whale Cock.
Oh,
and I don't think I can quote any of the lyrics here, but just believe me.
Maybe we
that was a segue
bit.
I didn't see coming.
Yeah, let's play a little bit on our way out as we take one more break before revealing the number one thing this week that made us go wow. And I will just add RuPaul's Drag Con LA 24, July 19th and 20th. Tickets are on sale now.
When is it again?
Yeah, July 19th and 20th.
I had no idea. That gives me more time. I was gonna get t-shirts and stuff. Oh, that's good news. Thank you so much.
Tickets at RuPaulsDragCon.com. James St. James will be there. Yes, we should do something. Yes. We should do that book thing we were gonna do together.
Oh yeah, totally. I haven't been able to go to the last two, in fact. So
well, the last time you broke your arm to get out of sitting down with me, so. Yeah.
I threw myself down a flight of stairs to get away from you.
It was very effective, I must say. All right, we'll be right back after the break here on the WOW Report.
You're listening to World of Wonders WOW Report. Things that make us go wow.
Welcome back to the WOW Report. I'm Fenton here with Blake and James and Thomas still away. And we've been counting down the top 10 things that made us go wow. And we've reached number one.
Number one.
The Oscars are coming up. They'll be this week. We can talk about them next week, I'm sure. But it's going to be an exciting show. There's no getting around it. I am very excited for Ryan Gosling to sing I'm Just Ken. And with all the Kens, I think that's going to be a high point. Of course, the best song will probably go to I love the I'm just a Barbie.
What is that?
Billie Eilish.
God, the way she just moans and groans and I'm just a girl. I can be bought. Like, I don't even, this song just drives you crazy. Anyway, the best actress category is shaping up to be quite a
doozy.
Crossed. I want Lily Gladstone to win for Killers of the Flower Moon. She would be the first Native American to ever win the Oscar. But it looks like Emma Stone will probably get it for Poor Things. She seems to be on a roll.
Well, we're kind of over. So final thing, who do you think is going to win Best Film?
Oppenheimer, of course. Really? Oppenheimer is going to sweep. Yeah, it will. It's going to sweep.
I'm thinking it'll be Poor Things.
Do you?
I don't like that
anywhere.
I just feel like it's going to be that.
I know we're out of time, but I never do Oscar predictions except in the documentary category. And I did really well last time with Navalny. I got that one right. And I tell you, the short documentary award is going to go to Sheila Nevins with her first directed film, The ABCs of Book Banning.
Oh, that's fascinating. Yes. Yeah. In fact, she's won a couple awards already. She's won a number of awards already.
Right, but never an Oscar, and this is the first film she's directed.
No. I mean this season for that. I think she's been going around collecting awards all season.
Yeah. Well, good luck, Sheila Nevins. She already holds the honor of having our boardroom named after her.
She does, as well as I think having the most Emmys of any living person. I think.
RuPaul's coming for her, though.
He's the Beyonce of TV.
There you go. Thank you for tuning into the Wear Report. Thank you for listening. Thank you, James. Thank you, Blake. Oh, and thank you, Madonna, for making me cry. Same time, same place next week. Until then, go out and do something that makes the world go